First of all, thanks for letting me speak here. I decided to give a talk on a topic which is a little bit more out there for me. So I was a part of this team of people listed below here, and we took a look at, I would say, some more astrophysical prospects of observing, I would say, large mass ratio in spirals into black holes in the electromagnetic band. Before I start, I really want to stress this is, let's say, the first pilot study, and we hope to have more papers in the series and improve the model. So this is kind of like the first out of hopefully many results in this respect. Okay, so also before I delve into this, I want to say that we are now not in the precision physics zone, as was the case for, waveform modeling and so on. Now we are in the squiggly line zone, where instead of equalities, you will see this symbol appearing, and it means don't trust whatever appears behind that symbol too much. It might be an order of magnitude estimate. It might be, it's just often a qualified guess, really. Okay, so let me just mention a pretty famous historical result. So OJ287 is a source in the sky that has been seen since the end of the 19th century, which had periodic bursts with a typical time scale of let's say 12 years. You would get two bursts per this time scale. And for a long time, it was a little bit mysterious. It was associated with a galaxy, right? But that was about as much as we knew about it. Over time, it became obvious that the bursts aren't quite periodic, but they took like a century, right? So we had a century of data on this. And the variability was persistent and it had a clear pattern, but nobody knew what it was. And in the late 2000s, Valtonen and collaborators kind of converged to the idea that this is a supermassive black hole binary, right? So they took the data, took a 2.5 PN orbital evolution model, which includes, energy and angular momentum dissipation, which means you don't have periodicity. You have an in spiral that you can already see in the data. Interpreted the system as such, right? As a binary with a mass ratio of 10 to minus 2, and predicted the next burst in 2015, in December 2015. And they really, got an observation campaign going. And this is what happened. So this peak here is the 5th of December. And this is an optical light curve. And this black curve is some kind of semi-empirical model for the burst that they would see. And the red dots are basically the data, right? So they really saw it basically up to a few weeks within the estimate given by Valtonen and collaborators. And the point is that that since you have so much data, you can, for instance, constrain, at least, there are some assumptions being made, but you can constrain the spin within the percent level, right? The primary spin, the heavy black hole. And I find this really quite exciting. There was another passage in 2019, and I haven't seen that published yet. So I think it's not yet out. They are probably processing the data, but I would be on the outlook for that. So the answer to the question in the title of this talk is yes. We are already observing large mass ratio in spirals into massive black holes. This is happening right here, right now. And now the question is how to model it, right? Because this model was very semi-empirical. And many people kind of take a sort of brute force approach, but the large mass ratio is kind of restrictive, but at least they create some kind of like approximate space-time. But even there, the separation of scales is is pretty harsh. So what we did was we tried to formulate a more tractable model, which would also apply it to a wider range of situations, which I will discuss in a moment. And the point here is that you just, you know, step away a little bit from gravity and just say, okay, I have some kind of sphere of influence of this object, which is, you know, which integrates out everything that is happening on the closed scales to the secondary, to the small secondary. I have some kind of sphere of influence, and I make everything within the sphere of influence co-move with the secondary perturber, right? So it's as simple as that. And here are some test runs. So you let your kind of sphere of influence move in a fluid. And this is what happens. You have an overdensity in front and underdensity behind. So the color coding is density. Purple is an underdensity. You know, green, red, yellow are overdensity. So when you go over the speed of light in the medium, you start getting this nice bow type shock in front of your perturber, which is exactly kind of something that you would like to have happening. And another word of caution is, you know, you are representing the sphere in a finite grid. So if you take a look at this guy in the lower right corner, you know, it doesn't look fair to him that this is like supposed to be a sphere. But really, we found out that it doesn't matter what is the precise shape in 3D of the sphere. It's more about the cross section, and the cross section might be actually quite fine. So, you know, but again, we are in the squiggly zone here. This is more about some kind of qualitative correspondence. Okay, a little bit more about the sphere, right? So now you have this kind of model which integrates out all the internal degrees of freedom and is supposed to just, you know, effectively parametrize the influence of some kind of perturber on the accretion disk. Now the thing is that you can very well motivate this model for stars with strong winds. So they have a wind, and that creates a sphere of influence. You have a transition, you have a shock in the medium when you are moving with respect to the medium. You have a bow shock, and you can very well fit your bow shock to what this sphere of influence is doing to your gas. And this is a formula, you know, and it includes in particular the relative velocity of the perturber with respect to the gas you are perturbing by the motion. But here are things such as the outflow rates, the wind velocity, magnetization of the plasma, speed of sound in the medium. So it is an involved formula, but this is the radius roughly. And when you have the gravitational action is long range. You will have things such as, you know, the body goes through the gas, it creates a wake behind it, it accretes most of the matter through a wake, which is behind it. And it is much more complicated, but you can be very nonchalant about it. You just say, okay, I have this sphere of influence where I make things co-move. So how much momentum am I passing onto the gas? And you make this momentum match the hydrodynamic drag that is occurring on the body itself. So this is another kind of effective parametrization. But as a reminder, the size of the sphere is not the size of the body. It depends in particular on the relative velocity of the orbit with respect to the gas, the accretion disk gas. And here on the right, you have some examples of orbits, you know, so this is like a bird's eye view from top. So you have a near spherical orbit in the first row, and then you have some kind of elliptic, less inclined orbit here in the second row, and then you have a spherical orbit with low precession of the meridional plane, or I don't know, you know what I mean. And so these will all determine the relative velocity. So when you have a lower inclination, you basically co-move with the disk, and your relative velocity might be very small. So this kind of increases the sphere of influence. On the other hand, these really supersonic transitions through the disk seem to have a large influence. Okay, so the setup is you take a GRMHD code, in this case,
Harm. 2 minutes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, so you set up your simulation, you let it evolve, you put the disk, you put the star inside, and this is what it looks like. And it sends out blobs and outflows, and it influences the disk a lot, let's just say. Yeah, and you can see the frequencies in the outflow and in the accretion rate. So in particular, this is 2 times the f theta, so the frequency of passage, you know, vertically through the flow. And there are sources out there where you can, in principle, identify them potentially as being sources where such a perturbation of the accretion flow is happening. In particular, I selected this source because it seems like, in principle, it could be seen by LISA if these really, really rough estimates work out. Okay, so, but the problem is, you know, if it is not a black hole, if it is a compact object, hydrodynamical drag has a very large influence, and your radiation reaction estimates of the mass are not very accurate. Okay, so I will leave the conclusions there and let's give space to questions, perhaps. Thanks.
Thank you for the good timing. Any questions?
Thanks, Wojtek. Nice, very nice. Do you know how they determine the masses of the two objects?
In OJ?
Yeah.
So in OJ, it's, well, they basically assumed this kind of geometry. And from that, they figured out the orbital periods, the period derivatives. So in principle, I guess they have the chirp mass and the symmetric mass ratio, right? So I think that's basically the story there.
I see. Thank you.
Okay, Bernard, do you have a question?
Yeah, thanks. Yes, very interesting. So from your most of your discussion, it seemed to me that you're focusing more on hydrodynamics than gravitational radiation reaction. Can you, so with respect to these various cases that you're looking at, there may be in spiral happening, but is it gravitational radiation driven? Do you find anywhere this is compelling?
So, I mean, the problem is that the hydrodynamical drag can mimic radiation reaction. So that for some time, right? So we would have to have a very consistent observation. So in principle, you can have a main sequence star kind of flying through the disk and only evolving due to a hydrodynamical drag, or you can interpret the drift in the period as purely radiation reaction. And that's exactly this source. What I did here was I said, okay, I will take the period drift and only interpret it using the Peters-Matthews formula. Very simple, right? Only interpret it as due to radiation reaction, and then the perturber is a 100 solar mass, probably black hole, right? But if it's not a black hole, then, you know, definitely it is lower mass, and this is not radiation reaction.